Why, hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Delighted to have you with me today. What day is it? I don't know. I just got back from vacation. It's Monday, I believe. Monday. Yes, it is, I'm told. Welcome. The phone number, if you'd like to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Keep in mind, there is a bit of a delay on the phone, so just get to your point here. We can't do a lot of chit-chat. And I want to start with a caller who has waited patiently because I wanted to talk about this issue. Calling from Atlanta, Georgia is Joe. And let me see, can I fire? There we go. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate your taking my call. The first question or the first comment I want to make is, did you hear our esteemed mayor or my esteemed mayor, Mayor Bottoms, although I call her Mayor Pitts, said that 80, I don't remember the percentage, but that X percent of the crime in Atlanta was caused by guns. I'd like to get your take on that. And second is talking about her reelection or non-reelection campaign. My thought is that it's a tacit admission that she's not up to the job. And secondly, that in order to salvage any future political aspirations she has, that she decided not to run for reelection because she knew she would not be reelected and didn't want future opponents to be able to use that against her.
Oh, you know, I actually, yes, she has future political aspirations. She's going to go spend some time with her family. She knows she can't win re-election right now. Kasim Reed, the former mayor of Atlanta, is going to run. Let me set the stage here for those of you listening nationally, because, you know, she was vetted to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick. She was. Stacey Abrams was not. Keisha Crimeway Bottoms was. He ultimately went with Kamala Harris, who might be even slightly more incompetent than Keisha Crimewave. And then they offered her an ambassadorship and they offered her a cabinet position and she decided, no, she should have taken it. Here's the situation in Atlanta. The mayor of Atlanta is dealing with a crime wave that came after the George Floyd riots. Like a lot of mayors in a lot of cities around the country that are Democrat, in order to express solidarity with Black Lives Matter, what these mayors did is they made the police the fall guys for everything. The police were the bad guys. And we've entered into a situation now where we've got a bunch of armchair quarterbacks looking at everything the police do with skepticism, to the point that you look at the body camera and you second guess, well, you know, maybe had the police counted to five Mississippi instead of opening fire immediately, this could have done differently. Maybe we should have a social worker go with the police. Maybe we should have if pigs had wings, they wouldn't. What was my foot? No. It's, if the frogs have wings, they wouldn't bounce on their butts. Maybe, just maybe. My father-in-law has some great expressions. But none of them would have worked here on the crime problem, because the mayor of Atlanta and mayors of other cities have gone out of their way to attack the police. From Houston to Dallas to Chicago to Washington to New York to Seattle to Portland to Los Angeles to San Francisco to Philadelphia, around the country, Democrats, and a lot of them district attorneys who were funded by George Soros, decided that they were going to think differently about crime. And in thinking differently about crime, and let's be clear here, there's no problem with thinking differently about crime. The problem is they didn't really think, they just decided to do the opposite of enforcement. They said, well, we're just going to stop enforcing crime. You know, in San Francisco, believe it or not, San Francisco has seen a drop in crime. They have seemingly solved, this progressive district attorney in San Francisco has solved the crime problem. And do you know how he solved the crime problem? They're not prosecuting. They're not enforcing. In fact, they're getting rid of some crimes. They've declared shoplifting now as a misdemeanor, not a felony. So by not prosecuting the crimes and not arresting people for committing crimes, they on paper have solved the crime problem. The district attorney in San Francisco with a straight face can say that crime has gone down in San Francisco, that arrests have gone down. Well, yes, because they've stopped arresting people. They've stopped pursuing crimes. Now, the mayor of Atlanta, Keish Crimewave, she has decided the way she's going to solve crime is she's going to set up a new department in the city to tackle crime. Now, I know what you're thinking. No. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I saw this and said, well, isn't this called the police force? Well, no, she's going to come up with an entirely new department, a new bureaucracy in the city of Atlanta to tackle crime other than the police, because you see, the police are bad. But it's not just that. Where is this? I had this in the stack of stuff. Where is this? Yes. So the police in Atlanta are abandoning the police department. This is from the Washington Examiner. Lieutenant Mark Cooper spent 26 years as an Atlanta police officer. His goal was to hit the 30-year mark, collect his pension, and go. But he had to cut his journey short. Until last week, I was proud to tell everyone that I met that I worked for the Atlanta Police Department, he said in his resignation letter of June 10th. His view of the department changed following the arrest of six Atlanta police officers after a video surfaced of them pulling two college students from their car during a protest. Now, to set the stage here, these college students, they were black, and they were at the George Floyd riots, and the police ordered them to pull over, and they kept trying to drive. They wouldn't listen to the police or the police officers, none of whom were white. Not a single white officer was involved. Tasered the college students and pulled them out of their cars. And the mayor of Atlanta and the then district attorney made them the bad guys. I think a couple of them lost their jobs. They weren't prosecuted, but then Garrett Rolfe, an officer in Atlanta, was prosecuted for shooting a Rashard Brooks, who tried to fire a taser gun at him. Rolfe fired back, as he should have. That was his training. And now he's being prosecuted for murder. Cooper, this police officer who's quit, said he had to go because he couldn't, quote, represent a department that does not support the backbone of this very department. It's disheartening and it's demoralizing. Thomas Crowder, an officer, also tendered his resignation. Crowder, born and raised in Atlanta, had always dreamed of becoming a police officer, and he wrote in his farewell letter, "Today's my last day as a City of Atlanta employee, and I would never have thought that I would be so happy to leave. I cannot see a reason that an officer who's been on the department less than 20 years would not leave. At this moment, you guys have no backing from your command staff. It is crazy they could ask you to stay at work or even leave the precinct knowing that they are not going to have your back and willing to fire you as soon as the citizen complains." A June survey of nearly 200 police departments by Police Executive Research Forum, a nonpartisan, nonprofit Washington-based think tank, showed a 45% increase in police retirement rates and an 18% increase in resignations across the country compared to the previous year, 2020 to 2021 versus 2019 to 2020. "We're in uncharted territory right now," the executive director of their organization, Chuck Wexler, said. "Policing is being challenged in ways I've never seen before. Not only do police departments face challenges retaining officers, but they also had a hard time pulling in new recruits." Outgoing mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Crimewave Bottoms, has come under intense scrutiny for not being tough enough on crime. She blamed Atlanta's soaring crime and 50% jump in murders on Republicans ending COVID-19 restrictions early and gun laws. Have you noticed that the Democrats, they can't blame people for killing people. They blame the gun. It's not the people killing people, it's the gun. And yet, words are violence now to the Democrats, and people saying things they don't like are killing people. Tucker Carlson is killing people by talking on Fox News, but it's a gun doing all the killing otherwise. It's Facebook. Facebook is killing people. Joe Biden says Facebook is killing people. In fact, I reached out to Mark Zuckerberg's team to see if he wanted to come on the program and talk about everybody blaming Facebook for everything. You know what? Why the Democrats really hate Facebook, don't you? It's because Ben Shapiro dominates Facebook. In fact, NPR has a story up. Where is this? I got it in my stack of stuff. NPR has they're doing a study on misinformation. And one of the stories on misinformation from NPR, this is the headline, Outrage as a Business Model, How Ben Shapiro is Using Facebook to Build an Empire. An NPR analysis of social media data found that over the past year, stories published by the site Shapiro founded, The Daily Wire, received more likes, shares, and comments on Facebook than any other news publisher by a wide margin. Even legacy news organizations that have broken major stories and produced groundbreaking investigative work don't come anywhere near close. Now, this is very funny here. Listen to this. Daily Wire articles with headlines such as Book Review, Proof That Wokeness Is Projection by Nervous Racist White Women Who Can't Talk to Minorities Without Elaborate Codes, regularly garner tens of thousands of shares from the site, and Shapiro is turning that Facebook reach into a rapidly expanding, cost-effective media empire. One expert's worry could be bring further polarization. There's a demand among certain subsets of the public for outrage politics, says Jamie Settle, director of the Social Networks and Political Psychology Lab at the College of William and Mary. This happens on both sides, the left and the right, but the people who do this on the right have just found a lot more successful ways of doing it. But this is the key here. The site produces little original reporting, but instead mostly repackages journalism from traditional news outlets with a conservative slant. That alone wouldn't be newsworthy, but the Daily Wire has turned anger into an art form. Now, how are they classifying misinformation? They're classifying it by doing it the way that everyone else seems to do it. As Settle explains, by only covering specific stories that bolster the conservative agenda and only including certain facts, readers will come away from the Daily Wire with the impression that Republican politicians can do little wrong and cancel culture is among the nation's greatest threats. In other words, they're doing what the mainstream media has always done. They're actually out there saying, hey, we're going to cover certain stories, only certain stories. And in those stories, we're going to cover the facts and amplify the facts that make our case. And the media is outraged by it. Really what's going on here. They don't like Ben Shapiro, obviously, because he is a conservative. They don't like the Daily Wire because the Daily Wire pulls in more traffic than they do on Facebook. So they hate Facebook as a result. Facebook is bad because Ben Shapiro generates a lot of traffic off of Facebook. That has a lot to do with it. That's why the president of the United States comes out and says Facebook is killing people by allowing misinformation. Now, what is misinformation? According to National Public Radio, funded by your tax dollars, it is including certain facts so that the reader comes away with an impression. Isn't that what the media does? This is where we are as a nation. As the NPR notes on the Daily Wire doesn't push out false information. The Daily Wire isn't putting out lies. It's just they only cover certain stories. And those stories, therefore, leave an impression that the side the Daily Wire is on is right. That's what CNN does. That's what MSNBC does. That's what NPR does. They just hate the competition. And so more and more now around the nation, you've got police leaving their jobs in Atlanta, Georgia, in Dallas, Texas, in Chicago, Illinois. They've got deficits in police hiring. And the national media continues to tell stories that, well, the police are to blame for the crime wave. Because the police are the ones brutalizing other people. The police are the problem. This is a real, real problem for the media, and they don't like that there are competitors out there. This is why they hate Fox News, by the way. Because Fox gets so many more eyeballs than each of these other individual channels. You notice they come after Facebook because of Daily Wire. They come after Fox News because of Tucker Carlson, because he dominates. It's all a ratings ploy. These people just don't like that there's competition providing an alternative to the stuff they think. They don't like that there's counter-programming, and so they're just trying to censor everyone. And that, by the way, so many people now realize is why there's so much indifference to the American media. This hour of the program is sponsored by the Daily, not the Daily Wire, the First Liberty. First Liberty Building and Loan. If you are in charge of getting loans for your business, you want to grow your business, go to FirstLibertyGA.com, FirstLibertyGA.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring the program.
The unknown came to the workplace in 2020 and things have changed. Everybody's looking to work out of their house, so they want a great chair. I found a great chair, the X chair. It's at the forefront of home and office settings during this transition. And X chair's newest innovation, the Elimax temperature regulation, will take your sitting comfort to a whole new level. There's a patent pending for the Elimax. It allows you to experience cooling, heating, massage in your lower back while you're working. You're feeling stressed out from the Zoom calls, the Microsoft Teams meetings? Turn on Elimax massage therapy. X chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar DVL support was already the best in class, and now you get Elimax. Imagine regulating your body temperature and getting massage therapy while you're working. It really is a fantastically comfortable, well-designed, well-put-together chair. Go to xchairerik.com right now. That's xchair, E-R-I-C-K.com, or call 1-844-4XCHAIR to save $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. Go to xchairerik.com now or use code XWheels for free X-Wheel blade casters. xchairerik.com. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, if you want to call in and be a part of the program, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I tried as best I could to completely unplug while I was on vacation, and that meant I didn't check email. And during commercial breaks, I've been scrounging around on emails. So there's a crazy phenomenon that happens when you start a radio program or a TV program, but really for radio. You get put on these mail lists where people email and say, hey, can I be on your radio program? Or I represent someone who would love to be on your radio program. Or my favorite is, did you know this is a trend? And with this trend, you may want to have on my expert to talk about this trend. And I get crazy ones. So here are two of them that I've gotten today. One is on wedding presents. And we are apparently in wedding season. I thought wedding season was been going on for a while. But apparently, I have two separate ones on weddings. The first one is on wedding gifts. And this one is on the best adult novelty to give as a wedding present. Forget the china. We're talking vibration technology. Made in China. Who would give that as a wedding present? But then the other one is hot lesbian weddings. Yes. Not just lesbian weddings, but the trend of Instagram quality hot lesbian weddings. I mean, I'd go. Who comes up with this stuff? It's like, so like every week I get an email from someone who does some sort of marijuana service, and they want to come on and talk about the trend in edibles. I'm thinking maybe I should have this guy on one day just for the heck of it. Where do people come up with these sort of pitches? And wait, here's a new one. This one just came in as I was speaking. The deputy executive director of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators would like to come on to talk about the current state of political affairs and the Biden administration as if, wants to talk about Stacey Abrams. No. Do these people not pay attention to what sort of show this is? I mean, honestly, I'm at a loss. I'm sorry. I should move on. The amount of crazy pitches, though, that I get, and by the way, can I like get on the file that says I don't actually do a lot of interviews, that I would appreciate not having people call and ask to be on the program? Because if you've ever listened to this program, for better or worse, we don't do a ton of interviews here. And yet they want to come on. I'm actually intrigued by the hot lesbian wedding one, though. We may have to work on that one. All right. We got to move on to other stuff. There is so much stuff that I have not talked about. And yet, when we come back, we got to talk about a global warming update and an environmentalism update, because there is a new pitch out there. based on a book that even the New York Times reviewed, that environmentalists should start getting violent, that only through violence will they be able to force the country to change its direction and head off disaster. That's legit the take from a new environmentalist book that has a somewhat favorable New York Times review, and they want you to give up your gas stove as well. Well, friends, it is that time. We haven't done this in a while, and we're going to need to. Just to set the stage.
It sure is hot outside.
Hey, where did all the snow go?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's getting warmer. It's getting warmer.
Every year the summer's warmer. What am I?
Now, you see, a lot of folks have some sort of parody song. This is an actual song. There's no parody here. This some genius decided to get this song done and get teachers to play it in school as a way to indoctrinate kids about global warming. And it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, which means I like to play it as my introduction to the stupidity of all the global warming nonsense that we have out there, because boy, do we have some nonsense out there today. This is just striking to me. Ezra Klein in the New York Times has a story. It's a review of a book, Andrew Malm's How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Ezra Klein of the New York Times, the opinion columnist, reviews How to Blow Up a Pipeline, a book. You won't find, he writes, anywhere inside instructions on sabotaging energy infrastructure. A truer title would be Why to Blow Up a Pipeline. On this, Malm's case is straightforward, because nothing else has worked. Decades of climate activism have gotten millions of people into the streets, but they haven't turned the tide on emissions or even investment. Citing a 2019 study in the journal Nature, Malm observed that, measured by capacity, 49% of the fossil fuel burning energy infrastructure now in operation was installed after 2004. And in the expected emissions from projects in some stage of the planning process, and we are most of the way toward warming the world by 2 degrees Celsius, a prospect scientists consider terrifying and most world governments have repeatedly pledged to avoid. Some hoped that the pandemic would alter the world's course, but it hasn't. Oil consumption is hurtling back to pre-crisis levels, and demand for coal, the dirtiest of fuels, is rising. The question at the heart of Malm's book is why this isn't already happening, why environmentalists are not getting violent, putting pipelines out of commission, picking them apart, demolishing them, burning them, blowing them up. Let the capitalists who keep on investing in the fire know their properties will be trashed. Were we governed by reason, he writes, we would be on the barricades today, dragging the drivers of Range Rovers and Nissan patrols out of their seats, occupying and shutting down the coal-burning power stations, bursting in upon the Blair's retreat from reality in Barbados, and demanding a reversal of economic life as dramatic as the one we bore when we went to war with Hitler. Now, here's the thing, and this is increasingly common on the left, and you do need to understand this overall. There is a trend on the left to claim that peaceful movements of protest were not really successful. So we hear this a lot in terms of the Black Lives Matter protesters burning down the streets of America. You've got Nicole Hannah-Jones out there saying that burning down private property isn't really violence. What you have is this belief now that the civil rights movement was made to be pretended to be peaceful, but actually it was pretty violent, and it was the violence that pushed people. It was the violence that actually caused people to change. Now, again, back to Ezra Klein. Malm offers two answers for the resolute nonviolence of the climate movement. The first is strategic pacifism, the belief that nonviolent protest is more effective than violent resistance. Much of the book is occupied by Malm's rebuttal to potted histories of past social movements, which is persuasive in parts. He's surely right that we sanitized past uprisings, lionizing the peaceful and blackening or forgetting the names of the violent. There is at least an argument that it's the interplay of forces that transformed societies. There was no peaceful American Revolution. There were riots and rifles woven into the civil rights movement. Does this movement possess a radical flank? Asked Malm. As to whether blowing up pipelines would work here and now, Malm is less convincing. The likeliest outcome is that a few dozen climate activists would be jailed and a wave of laws criminalizing peaceful protests would sweep the nation. He's got no answer for those who fear the probable political consequences, a backlash that sweeps enemies of climate change into power, eliminating even the fragile hopes of policy progress. And on it goes. This is essentially Ezra Klein saying he's got ideas that are plausible, but Republicans might get elected. You've got a book now advocating violence to solve the climate change problem. And Ezra Klein of the New York Times is essentially saying, yeah, but the GOP would come to power, so maybe we shouldn't. I mean, he doesn't really have a rebuttal to the guy's argument other than, well, Republicans will get elected. Climate alarmism is useless, tweeted Juan Moreno Cruz, the Canada research chair in energy transitions at the University of Waterloo. The impact of climate change are here. Let's talk about climate realism. The problem, he continued, is that taking climate solutions have left us unprepared for actual climate change. We keep running models and fighting over which solution is best, but we've done nothing to address the impact of climate change. Adaption research and implementation is severely underfunded. But when I spoke to Moreno Cruz, his realism didn't seem much more realistic, and he knew it. We need to provide adaption measures and investments to the majority of people on the planet. Adaption is a monstrous challenge, arguably harder and pricier than simply reducing emissions. It requires infrastructure, migration support, income and food security, and much more. And the financing has to flow from rich countries to the poor. At this point, it becomes very similar to migration in the sense that our incentives in the rich countries to protect the poor countries are not aligned. And essentially, the argument falls back to violence. We see this in the Black Lives Matter movement, where they essentially defame Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement, claiming that, yeah, they were the nonviolent ones, but really it was the rioters who forced the change. Really, it was the violence that forced the change. Essentially, Martin Luther King Jr. and John Lewis, St. John Lewis of voting rights, and Mahatma Gandhi are all being slandered by the left now for being peaceful protesters. They could have gotten there a lot sooner had they been violent. And now you've got the environmentalists out there saying, we got to be violent. And you got Ezra Klein of the New York Times saying, yeah, you make a good point, but the Republicans might get elected. I'll tell you who's about to turn violent out there. Chefs. Cities are trying to get rid of gas stoves, and restaurants are fuming mad. I have an induction cooktop. For those of you who don't know what an induction cooktop is, it's not an electric stove. So an electric stove is a coil that heats up, gets hot, and then transfers the energy. It is not very efficient. A gas stove fires up gas that heats the bottom of a pot, but a lot of the heat also escapes around the pot. An induction cooktop is actually the most efficient way to heat up a pot. A magnet spins and causes a physical reaction that generates heat with the metal of the pot. Doesn't work on glass pots. Your pot won't work unless a magnet can stick to it. But an induction cooktop can boil a pot of water faster than anything. An induction, I've tried this. We've got our induction cooktop. And we had an electric one until my wife was cleaning the countertop and she stepped on it and shattered it. So we upgraded to induction. And with induction, you put the pot on and you can crank it up to high and there's a boost button and you cook it. And a full pot of water can come to boil in a couple of minutes. Very, very quickly compared to gas or electric. Gas actually comes better than electric. Gas is even more efficient than electric. But the thing you don't get with an induction cooktop, I love my induction cooktop. Y'all know I love to cook. But the thing you can't get with the induction cooktop is the fire. There is no fire. There is no flame. A lot of Asian cooking depends on the wok and the gas flame. And high-end cooking for searing, for charring, depends on the flame. Well, environmentalists have decided that we've got to give up our gas cooktops. Now, here's the other thing. So I was in the mountains last week, And the stove was gas. Even the oven, I don't like gas ovens. I like electric ovens better. But even the oven was gas. Why? Because you're in the mountains during the winter. If the power goes out, the gas stays because the gas is all underground and electric is mostly above ground. So the gas will stay on when the power goes out. So if you have a gas water heater, if you have a gas stove, if you've got gas in your fireplace or your heaters, you're going to be able to stay warm in the wintertime. Same in the South with hurricanes. When a hurricane comes through and the power goes out, if you've got a gas water heater and you've got a gas stove, you can still cook and keep warm and have a hot shower. And the left wants you to give up those luxuries in the name of global warming. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Gas-fired stoves are emerging as a burning issue as American cities consider phasing out natural gas hookups to homes and businesses to reduce carbon emissions. Many restaurants and home chefs prefer cooking on gas-burning ranges, and persuading some to switch to electric stovetops is proving to be a hard sell. Several cities, including San Francisco and Seattle, have given ground on the issue by exempting stoves from natural gas bans or providing pathways for restaurants to secure waivers. George Chin, executive chef and founder of San Francisco restaurant China Live, said he was concerned about cities restricting a cooking technique that contributes to the texture and flavor of good Chinese cuisine, and said he can't achieve it on an electric stove. I got respect for the environment. I drive an electric car. I'm happy to pay the extra costs. But to say an electric stove is as good as a gas one is misunderstanding the art of cooking. Proponents of electrification say today's induction stoves, which use electromagnetic current to directly heat cookware, are much better than the electric cooktops of yesteryears, and once cooks learn to use them, superior to gas too. But some restaurant industry groups and others push back. Berkeley, California, of course Berkeley, became the first U.S. city to ban natural gas connections to new homes and businesses. They got sued by the Restaurant Association of California. The Restaurant Association lost, and you're seeing restaurants not move into Berkeley, California now. High-end restaurants are passing Berkeley by, now for a variety of reasons, but that as well. They want to force you to give up your gas range. Now, I don't care about gas ranges, and friends of mine who know I love to cook, they're always shocked, why don't you like a gas range? I actually do prefer induction. I've got an outside gas grill that has two side burners. If I need the gas for the flame, I can go outside and cook. Otherwise, inside, it's easier, and an induction stovetop does not get hot. I can boil a pot of water and then put my hand down on top of it, and my hand's not going to get burned. It is remarkable how great an induction cooktop is. But chefs need the flame, and the environmentalists are forcing them to give it up. Now, on top of that, let's go back to the pipe bomb or to the blowing up pipelines. One of the things that one of the people Ezra Klein talked to says governments need to enforce migration and incentivize migration. Bloomberg is yet again carrying water for the communist Chinese. Here's the headline. China is carrying out the world's largest climate migration program. And now this is the subtitle. This is the kicker. Few other governments are able to enforce such mass relocations as climate change is stressing communities with drought, extreme weather, higher temperatures, and desertification. And essentially, what they're arguing about here is that you're going to see China force people out of their towns. China is forcing people wholesale to pack up and leave their towns that they've lived in for years, their ancestral homes, and move to big cities where they can be controlled by the government more easily. And the environmentalists think it's a great thing. And in fact, the environmentalists, we wish that our country, the United States of America, could force these rural hicks to move into cities with the rest of us where the global pandemic will more easily kill them. Basically, they're leaving that part out. This is where we're headed with the environmentalists. I mean, the Enviro-Wackos are going to be a violent terrorist organization. When you've got Ezra Klein in the New York Times writing, well, you know, maybe we should blow up pipelines, but the Republicans will get elected, so probably we shouldn't. You got cities around the country saying you got to give up your stoves that you love and starve to death in the winter when the power goes out. And now you've got this absolutely insanity from Bloomberg saying, yeah, you know, government's forcing people to pack up and move and be done with their rural communities. It's actually a good thing. This is not sustainable, people. It's not sustainable. they're going to turn violent. And, you know, in some places they already are. There are terrorist groups out west dedicated to environmentalism. It's going to spread. They're trying to mainstream violence to force change. There will be a backlash. There absolutely will. Thank goodness. I need to introduce you guys to a new advertiser before I get out of here. And I want you to listen to me here. Don't chase it. No. Wait. You got to hear this. You guys have been asking for a long time. What can we do to fight back? Where can we shop? Who can we do business with? I've been working on this for a while and I'm glad they're finally here. You know, some of the biggest woke companies in America are your communication companies. And why don't you do business with a company that actually shares your values? So I'm delighted to welcome Patriot Mobile as a new sponsor. They are a cell phone company and they have tremendous coverage around the country, including wherever you are. I know most of you are in Georgia and I checked and they've got great coverage. In fact, they're the only wireless carrier out there that identifies as Christian and conservative. They are explicitly conservative and Christian. In fact, they donate part of their proceeds to help veterans and pro-life causes and others. Now, not only that, but you can get discounts if you're a veteran or a first responder. You can get a discount. If you got a multi-line family, you got multiple phones in your house, you can get a discount from them. And switching to Patriot Mobile now can get you 50% off your first 2 months or $100 off any phone in stock with a one-year contract. Now, you've got some great deals from Patriot Mobile, and they really are top-notch people, and you get free Premier activation included. Now, I got to tell you, in fact, I'm trying to get Glenn, the CEO, on the show because you've heard me talk about the Carroll Independent School District in Texas. He and his wife were two of the people who helped lead that pushback to CRT. So, I mean, dude is totally conservative. His company is conservative, and you get cancel-free culture. So you get a conservative group for your phone company that is not going to punish you for being a conservative, and they're not going to spend their money on causes that you loathe with Patriot Mobile. So here's what you do. You go to patriotmobile.com/Eric, E-R-I-C-K, patriotmobile.com/Eric, or you can call them as well. 972-PATRIOT is the number, 972-PATRIOT. But you call them, tell them I sent you, and get yourself transferred over. You can transfer over your phone number. You can port it over with Patriot Mobile. They are a fantastic company. Great people to know individually. They've got the right values. And you guys ask me all the time, what can I do? What can I do to fight back? Well, what you can do is take your business to a company like Patriot Mobile. So go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. Find out more. HR can just be overwhelming when you start your business. I know. I run a small business, this radio show and podcast. It's a small business. And HR manager salaries, they're not cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. It can overwhelm you with all the regulations and everything else. That's why you should use Bambee, B-A-M-B-E-E. You get a dedicated HR manager. You can craft HR policy, maintain your compliance, all for $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to one of your biggest strengths. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, by email, by real-time chat. From onboardings to even terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for $99 a month. Month to month, there are no hidden fees. You can cancel at any time. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time with HR compliance. Let Bambee do it for you. Get a free HR audit from them today. Go to Bambee.com/Eric right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/Eric. Spell BAM, BAMBEE.com/Eric, E-R-I-C-K. Now, y'all, this is some BS. I'm Bolshevik. This is what this is, Bolshevik. I'm going to start saying Bolshevik, and you'll know what I mean. Who's the Christian comedian, Tim, what's his name? My kids love the guy, and he says that all the time. The Christian cuss words, one of his, Bolshevik. This is a tweet from NBC. Everyone older than age 2 should wear masks, regardless of vaccination status, when schools reopen in the fall, according to updated guidance from the American Academy of Pediatrics released Monday. Now, you should know the American Academy of Pediatrics is yet another one of those national trade groups that's been hijacked by the wokes. And they're now pushing this, that your kids need to wear a mask even if vaccinated when they're in school. No, the hell they should not. This is ridiculous. This is getting silly. People are not going to take this stuff seriously, nor should they take this stuff seriously. They really shouldn't. It's time to get rid of masks, open up your offices. And by the way, I think you should get vaccinated. My whole family is vaccinated. I think everybody should get vaccinated. I really do. I really do think it works. In fact, the people who have gotten COVID who are vaccinated are asymptomatic. Something like 99% of deaths now are people who are unvaccinated, and 98% of hospitalizations are people who are unvaccinated. I think the vaccines work. Go get them. But it's the burden of risk is on you. Everybody go live your life now. And if you get it and you didn't get vaccinated, well, all right, then you play the risk.